Because if it's like an hour, goes over an hour, then you're just like,
yeah. I am not a chatty boomsticks.
We'll see.
This is 184, 5. I hope I'm pretty good at keeping conversation going.
I'm excited. That's what Nick said. Look forward to the questions.
So I wonder.
Is it on already?
Yeah, I've been recording, but just...
He always gets a little thing, so if we say something funny, which we didn't...
Yeah, and because I want to get the sound... You know that's going to be the start, right?
What?
That in case we say something funny, which we didn't. Okay, this is episode 185, and we're talking Friends... and I've got Nick, and I've got Beats. Hello.
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 Listeners will be very familiar with Nick, the producer.
Still makes me laugh when
you
say that.
Host? Yeah. You're not the host.
Producer's good. I like that.
Producer.
Put on my resume.
Yeah. I get to say, producer will fix things and all that stuff. If I go, I forgot to record an episode, Nick put something up saying, we didn't do an episode, sorry. But Beats.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know each other?
We know each other through Nick originally, but more closely now because we work in the same school.
That's right. We work in the new school.
For the first time, even though I have heard your name multiple times for many, many years.
Oh. Yeah. Well, hopefully that's a good thing, but let's move on from that. We're talking about you two.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, I've got a question for you that just occurred to me.
Oh, yeah.
What questions do you expect me to ask?
Oh, well, okay. Well, you've done a few friend podcast things.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be questions about maybe how we met and got to know each other. There might be questions about memories we have of each other.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking on my ride over here that... I've heard you ask other people about conflict in their friendship.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think we've had any. But sometimes that's the my concept of things and it doesn't match with the other person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else.
Right.
Really. Well,
what do you reckon, Beats? Conflict?
No, actually conflict did not even enter my mind, but I would be interested to answer that question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
For me, I just started thinking about the things that connected Nick and I in the first place and thought that your questions might be around that.
All right, we'll get to that at some point. But the other thing I wanted to bring up was you said that you read an Atlantic article about choosing friends. You said,
yeah.
we don't actually talk about our friendship, except recently you went and saw The Shining, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
And you said you read an article. What was that? About what was the Atlantic article about choosing friends?
It was very much that. It was about how we're in a culture that celebrates longevity of relationships, intimate relationships.
Mm.
You know, and friendship is secondary to that. So you talk about meeting someone, you talk about being in a relationship with someone, you talk about things not going well, things going super well. You talk about breakups and marriages and stuff. But with friends, maybe we don't so much. Mm. And I know that for me, in the last 15 years of my life, I have made a significant number of new friends. And I had always thought that friendships are from your childhood. And then you just get older and all your friends get older. I never realized that I could meet new people and then have the joy of sharing my stories again with in a new light, or choosing how I share who I am with other people. And that there's a huge amount of joy in that.
Mm.
And that, people don't ask you about your longest, your oldest friend. They ask you about the person who's your significant other, in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so I'd read that article, which was great.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what it was called, but it was about celebrating friendships and why do we not talk about when we lose friends, like we do when we lose partners or whatever.
Mm.
And so we were seeing The Shining. Melissa and I were seeing The Shining.
Yep.
And I told you that beforehand, I think.
Mm-hmm. That, you did.
And that you are one of those people who's like, my family knows that if we're going to see a horror movie, nobody messes with that. It's that's Nick and Melissa. That's Dad and Melissa. They like that. That's the thing they do, and nobody gets in the way of that.
Mm-hmm.
And same with like you and podcasting or just going out. For, you know, like it's really important to me that my family knows that my friends are a huge part of my life as well, and that there are times where they get some priority over my family, which it feels weird saying that out loud, but it's very true. My family knows about it, and I think for the most part they like make space for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Beats? Like, is that the same for you? Like, do you have a lot of new friends that you've made along the way, or is it a lot of your friends are friends you've had a long time?
I make a lot of acquaintances through my work and through meeting friends through other friends.
Yeah.
But I don't have a lot of longevity in new friendships. Right. Most of my friendships have been built either prior to work, but not as far back as school. I'm not friends with anyone from high school or college or anything like that, but I have a lot of old friends, like 20, 15 years, around about that time. But, like, for me, I have probably two hands worth of really great friends. Mm-hmm. And that's enough for me. Like, they fill my cup. They meet all my needs. I don't feel like I need more than that. And in a way, it's a little bit of a deficit for me because I feel like when all my needs are being met, I find it really hard to let new people in.
Mm. Yeah.
If I'm honest.
No, I understand that. Yeah. That's hard. I don't know if you need more than two hands worth of friends, especially close friends. It's the acquaintances stuff. I tend to make friends like I fall in love.
Yes.
Like quickly.
Yes.
Very quickly.
Yes.
And like when people around you notice, like, oh, are you two friends, best friends now? That happened certainly when I met Betty Chow, right? Mm. It was like literally someone said, what's going on? What happened? It's like, we're best friends now at work. Like it just happens that quickly. So I don't, like, I'm really excited to have this conversation because I know so little about your friendship. Because obviously, like you said, Beats, we work together now, but the only other time I saw you was if Nick's thing we were talking before about your 40th.
Yeah.
And then it was, let's go and I'm going to a movie. Who else is going? Beats was always on that list.
Yeah.
If it was a horror movie.
If it was a horror or slash weird movie that we were going to see. So when did you become friends for a start? I'm guessing you worked together.
Mm-hmm.
But when was that? I don't even know when that was.
I would be interested to see how different yours and my answer were.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to go first?
I kind of would like to, but I feel like my answer's pretty deep.
Yeah, okay. Well, then I'll go. Yeah, yeah. So So we met very briefly at the first school that I ever worked at.
Mm-hmm.
And you went off on mat leave, is that right?
Correct.
And I don't remember much about you.
Well, I was only there for 1 year.
Yeah, right. And so I know I was new to teaching.
Mm.
And were you in a different staff room? Yes, you were. Yeah. And so, like, I didn't have many memories.
Mm.
But then there were... Then when I... The next school I went to, we didn't work together. It was when I left that school and went to the next one, which I know this is all vague. I'm just not mentioning names.
That's all right. So the school after the one I worked with you?
Yes, that's right.
We both moved schools at the same time to different places?
Yeah. Now, I can't remember... This is where my memory is not as good anymore. I know that there was one occasion where there was some professional learning happening somewhere and you were delivering it.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into the room and you were like, Nick,
And I was like, oh, smells, oh, like, you seem like, I remember thinking, she seems excited to see me. And I don't know where this fits into the scheme of things. And if you can remember that and shine some light on it, that'd be great. But I was like, oh. And that's one of those, one of the first occurrences where I realized that I didn't realize that people remember me.
Mm.
And that highlighted that. But it was many years later that I was like, oh, that's one of those times where, oh, that's interesting. But then when I left school, mm-hmm. We left at the same time.
Yep.
And went to new school, you were the SLC there. You were the head of faculty there.
Mm-hmm.
So you were my boss.
Mm-hmm.
And my standard waiting time of like, getting to know people, being cagey about what I share with other people,
yep.
all the time. But every time, like, we talked curriculum or teaching, or when I saw you interacting with students, when I saw you nurturing students, when I saw you supporting staff, like, little things would come out where it was clear that we both thought the same around a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I always wanted to do my best work for you. So there was this weird thing where I was like, usually with the head teacher, head faculty, whatever, like, you know, I'm trying to do my job and be whatever, but like, I really wanted to impress you.
Mm-hmm.
I remember feeling that. And because the way you gave feedback around positive stuff to everyone was just really infectious.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we had this really great team, and then my mum got sick. And I think, I feel we got closest around that time. Mm-hmm. Like, you were there for me in ways that I didn't expect. And then we connected over things outside of work,
mm-hmm.
conversations and experiences outside of work. I knew we both liked horror stuff. I'm rambling. Mm-hmm. But then that's it. But from mm-hmm. there, like, I think from there, I was really petrified when you moved on and went to another school. But then it was fine
uh-huh.
because we still occasionally catch up, and then it's awesome.
Well, your story's more similar to mine than I had expected.
Okay.
Can I move on to mine? Fine. Is that okay? So I do remember you from the first school where we met,
mm-hmm.
and you were in science, Nick, then.
I was.
So different,
yeah,
well, you know,
yeah.
than now. Yeah. And I remember your passion for science, like the way you explained science and loved science was really infectious. And then we didn't see each other for quite a long mm. time until eventually I came into a school and I was your boss.
Yeah.
And it was my first time being the leader of a faculty there. The thing you alluded to before was I was a quality teaching consultant.
That's it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I would come into other schools
yes.
and run professional learning.
Yes.
So you would have seen me there, but I was not, I was an executive at that point,
right.
but I was not your executive
yeah.
or the head of a faculty.
Mm.
And then I loved the principal of the school where I was working a lot. And so I applied for an executive job there
mm-hmm.
and you ended up in my team, Nick.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It took me a long time to be able to transition between being a leader and a friend
mm.
because I had done a lot of reading about what makes a good leader, like
mm.
where is the line between friendship and leadership, and how can you blur those lines in a way that's still professional. And it took me a long time to want to relax enough to enjoy your friendship
mm.
as much as my heart really wanted me to. I'm a very emotional person, so I speak a lot about heart and feelings. And you mentioned your mum getting sick, Nick.
Yeah.
And to be honest, the day that your mum passed away
mm.
was the most memorable and pivotal moment in our friendship for me, because I had my whole life, this is a weird turn back to horror movies, had a morbid fear of funerals
mm.
because of my obsession with horror books and horror films. And I didn't go to my own family members' funerals in my life ever. Your mum's funeral was the first funeral I ever went to, because when you asked me to attend, I knew there was no way I could say no, because I knew what it would mean to you if I did not attend, but also how much it meant to you to even ask me to attend, because I know that would have been a little bit uncomfortable for you, because it was crossing the boundaries between work and personal life. And I just had to do it. And the fact that I made myself go to that and be there for you was the time that I knew that you would be a really important person to me for the rest of my life. So, yeah. I know it's very emotional. And it was, and weirdly, it was one of the greatest nights of my life.
It was a very good wake.
Were you there, Matt?
No.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. I remember that night so fondly, randomly. Yeah. It meant a lot to me.
It's like we've spoken about some of this stuff before, but not for a long time.
Mm.
Not for a long time. Thanks.
No, thank you.
I felt very supported at work. I was super nervous about being your friend because I knew you were a leader as well.
Mm.
And so that's from the other side as well. Like when a faculty knows that some people are closer than others, and particularly if it's the leader, like I never wanted to put you in an awkward position because it was clear that our friendship was developing. We've talked heaps about how we overthink stuff. I didn't want to put you in a position where it looked like you were being unprofessional, but you know, there were some times where I just had to share stuff with you, like in front of other people, because like I just had to, because you would have laughed or enjoyed it or whatever.
Can I ask you a bit? It's like, how do you manage that as a leader? Because you can overthink things all you want, but the blowback from that for you is minimal. You know, like, it's unprofessional, relationship, friends. That for you, that's a minimal impact, right? That might be people like, Nick gets favoritism. But how do you manage that as like someone who has to lead in a school of adults when you obviously make connections with people who are, I was going to say under you, but that's... What's the professional way of saying that? But like people that you lead, you obviously make friendships with or connect with people. That's just natural.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you manage that in a leadership setting?
I think always being open, honest, and leading with integrity.
Mm-hmm.
I never tried to hide the fact that Nick and I had a friendship, and there's not very many, to be honest. Mm-hmm. People from work that have remained my good friends. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been a teacher for 25 years. I was thinking about it today, and I have two or three people that really mean a lot to me and that I could never turn away from, that I met through work.
Right.
And Nick's one of them. And Tom Griffith, you've interviewed him before. Yeah. He's definitely one of them. I just think you have to be open and honest, because I think when you try to hide things, it starts to look a little bit like a clique.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we are adults, and it's okay to say that you have friendships outside of work, and it's okay to say that people are important to you. But if you, at work, you treat everyone the way they deserve to be treated and you give everyone what they need, then you're being a good leader,
right?
Regardless of how you feel about them outside of work.
And that was harder for you when you became friends, like you said, 2011, 2012, because you've read all these management books that are probably talking about that professional distance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you talked about obviously like the passing of your mum, Nick, but was there stuff before that, Nick, that you remember like, oh, this person... Like you said, like you're standoffish
yeah.
at the start, strangely enough. So am I. Who'd have thought, Nick, that we're very similar people in that way of when we start a new job, I would say we let other people reveal themselves.
Yes.
Before we reveal ourselves, right?
Yep, yep.
I wonder what that's about. Anyway, that's a separate... maybe...
That's next season.
Couples counselling we need to do together. But what made it... Was it like... I know some of this stuff is intangible, but was what made it different with Beats, do you think?
Horror stuff.
Right.
Like a real... It was the a real joy... Of morbid stuff, of scary stuff.
Right,
like,
but how does that come up?
I don't know.
I don't actually remember.
Right. I know.
If I'm honest, I do not remember.
Because that's what I mean. Like, it's yeah. how does it come up with a, you know, you're in a faculty and someone just brings up horror or...
Oh, well, I mean, we're English teachers, so we talk, you know, like occasionally we'd be reading stuff, occasionally. Right, right. But, yeah, I remember you talking about serial killers and being fascinated with serial killers.
I'm obsessed. Yeah, absolutely.
And I was like, oh... That's interesting. Like, I'm not obsessed with serial killers, but I could certainly want to know someone more if they are interested in that stuff.
Right, right, right.
Even then, you liked David Fincher. We'd shared that we both like his work, how he manages to capture horrors in really interesting, visually arresting ways.
Yes.
And so, you know, when it became apparent that it wasn't just scary concepts, but it was the way those scary concepts were translated to the screen and both of us loving being in the moment of really scared. Like my family can't understand why I like really scary, like really intensely scary things that will emotionally disturb me. Whereas you understood, you were like, you seemed to enjoy that moment as much as I did. And I don't know that I know anyone else as much. Justine
does,
right?
Yeah.
Justine is maybe the other person I know that enjoys.
Yeah, the way you described that, I was like, yeah, this is that's the exact thing where I'm like, I don't want to go through that.
I actually, knowing that this podcast was happening, I actually tried to find a word because I want it to sound intelligent that explained an obsession with being afraid, and I couldn't find a word that actually really meant what I like to feel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when people go to the gym and they love the, is it adrenaline from the gym or endorphins or whatever it is, or, you know, people like to skydive. It's not that either. Like, I actually want to go to bed at night and hear a noise and crap myself wondering if there is actually a child in my ceiling wanting to eat my face off. I want to have that experience.
Now, this is episode 185.
Yeah.
That may be the most amazing sentence that's ever been uttered. Part of me wants to cut that out, put it at the start, but it gives too much away. Wow, okay. Is that how you feel?
Yeah.
Right.
When we saw...
I can't wait to play that for Justine. She's going to be like,
When we saw Hereditary in the cinema.
Yeah, that's
like, I was
one,
like, right? we have to... What, I've read about Hereditary. That, right? Mm-hmm. When I read about... Just read a snippet of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is a Melissa film.
Mm-hmm.
I remember messaging and going, we have to see this film. And I was like, you know me. Like, I don't read reviews. I'm afraid of spoilers. I'd see a trailer in the cinema and then there's an image in it and then I can't let go of that image while I'm watching the film. So
close your eyes.
So I close my eyes and headphones in for trailers or walk out. But yeah, I'd read something about that film and the way someone described it, I'm like, have to see that film, Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
And that cinema experience was, that was another moment in our friendship. We were both scaring us, like we were scared shitless.
Yes.
Both of us enjoying being scared shitless.
Together.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And like we're whispering to each other, I fucking hate people who talk in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't not.
Why are they laughing?
Yeah.
It's not funny, you idiots.
Yeah, that's and then Toni Collette's scene, the scene, and then I remember going, it's got our money's worth. Like, like at this film's got a long way to go. This I did not expect. Incredible acting, something so messed up.
And the best bits, me at the end, will you walk me to the car park? And then the next best bit's lying in bed at night,
yeah,
scared, knowing that it's about 20 more minutes until I get a message from you,
yeah,
where you've analysed the film, you've sent me your interpretation, your commentary on, yeah, the direction and, yep, the production,
mm-hmm,
and some links to some things I, yep, should read about, yeah, the story.
Yeah.
I don't like to impose, but Justine's going to be sad that she hasn't seen all of these movies with you, because this is exactly what I get. I get woken up. Did you know? That's what I get. Did you know?
Well, she should come with us, yeah, from now on.
It's exactly the same. It's just like intensity.
Mm. Yeah.
That was an intense experience, terrifying. Now I'm going to read all about it and discuss it. And wow. The idea. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it makes it clearer, like, that you love the idea of being terrified after the fact.
Mm.
Can I tell you, Matt? Sorry, you looked like you're about to ask a question.
No.
But I must say, at 50 years old,
mm-hmm,
I still, when I need to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, will not put my feet down on the floor in case someone grabs me from under the bed.
Okay.
Like, I scooch to the end.
Yep, yep.
I scooch across as close to the bathroom as possible, and, yeah, I go to the bathroom. When I was buying my house, which was only a few years ago, I walked around, I checked where the manholes were, if there was an attic, and I actually analyze, okay, in a film, a child hid there or a person hid there. I can't buy a house because if I ducked out here, something's going to come out and attack me from,
yeah,
here.
Right.
Like, it actually consumes my whole life, but I like it.
Mm-hmm. So, to anyone listening, makes you sound like a crazy person.
Right.
But I know for a fact that the man next to me does the same at schools, preparing for zombie attacks.
That's what I'm about to say. Yeah, that's right. What I do. I'm about for the zombie apocalypse. Like, where's the safe spot? Where would I?
How to get on the roof?
Yeah.
Is there an easy way that I can get up that the zombies can't get up? What
do
type
you
of
really
zombies?
Do that?
Yeah. Every building I go in. Like, your
you
house has too many windows.
Have a zombie apocalypse.
No, but your house has so many of these windows. I'm like, this house is so unsafe.
Well, you shouldn't teach at my new school then.
Yeah, it's all windows.
It's all windows.
Yeah.
You'd be in big trouble.
Yeah. I've looked. You can get on the roof pretty easily, but then so could the zombies, I'm guessing.
Oh, that's funny.
Wow, that's funny. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you said, do you think a zombie apocalypse could happen, with the same intent as if I said to you, do you think there's a child in the roof that's going to eat your face off? It's all amazing. They could be. I'm not saying there can't be, but there could be.
Mm.
Wow. So can you remember, like, some of the first films that you went to see? Like, how did that build? Like, of let's go and see horror together. Oh, where this is even great
we
to see together.
Well, I think that the first thing we started doing was visiting each other's houses and watching, like, films.
The,
like,
French one, the underground one, wasn't that very early?
As above, above,
oh,
so,
yeah,
below.
So below.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that might have, was that after Hereditary? I don't know. We watched It Follows at your place.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're going to see They Follow together,
mm-hmm,
when it comes out later this year.
Okay.
Because, oh, man. But that's the other thing. When we watch... Some horror films are just like crap, schlocky, whatever, and it's fun. We enjoy that.
Yeah.
But when there's some really interesting metaphor that the horror leans into, that is like both of our brains crackle. Like, It Follows,
mm-hmm,
the whole thing about... sexually transmitted infections,
mm-hmm,
as that narrative idea,
yep,
and the, you know, young people making silly decisions, but that they embodied the STI in this following entity,
yep,
was just fascinating. And
then there
we were with our Proseccos or something, watching the film, chatting away around how, like, not only was it scary, but it was intellectually stimulating at the same time.
It's a commentary on actual life.
Yeah, that's right. And so now when I'm looking for horror films, I'm like, if there are some that seem like crazy shit scary,
mm-hmm,
Melissa, or if there's one that sounds like it's doing something different, Melissa, that's...
I like to feel scared, but I also like to feel revolted and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, I'm happy with any of those.
Yeah.
You know? And... I think the pinnacle of our, other than Hereditary, which was a very bonding early experience, For me, Midsummer. Midsummer was the, like, are you allowed to swear on this?
Yeah.
It was like the what the fuck movie for us. Yeah. Like, it was next level intellect, acting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fear.
Yes.
Revulsion.
Yeah.
Everything you could ever want in life from a film. And I thought about that movie for 6 months after watching
I was so happy that I saw that with you. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is the best person to experience this with.
Yeah.
And then I saw it 2 days later with my brother and Matt.
I wish I had. I wish I'd seen it multiple times on the big screen.
You know the start, like how traumatic the start is? Like, yes, the movie is not...
Mm-hmm.
That's when I turned to Nick and I was like, what? You're watching this again? I'm concerned about you. And then the movie ended and I was like, loved it. But the start, I did not. I was like, this is horrible. This is the worst thing I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's so traumatic.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then you're like, get to the end of the movie, you're like, that was pretty fun. I had a good time.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre how they managed to do that.
And I'm watching it.
Who was the director, Nick?
Ari Aster. Ari Aster. Same guy who did Hereditary.
Yeah. And
Beau Is Afraid.
Beau Is Afraid.
Oh, yeah, which was not great.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I agree to disagree.
But it wasn't the same
thing. It's not the same as those other two films.
No.
That's, well, it wasn't scary.
No. I was hoping it would be, but it wasn't.
It was a little bit too tongue-in-cheek for me. For me, it was like a slapstick comedy kind of thing. Like, I don't like that.
But he did say it was kind of a comedy as well. Like,
But also, it's a problem with a movie where everyone I've ever spoken to about that movie is like, I like this bit, and I like this bit, but I didn't like this bit, and they're often a different part.
But that,
but they just, it doesn't really fit together or anything like that. But yeah, Midsummer was just like, why are you watching this 2 days later? It's horrifying. And then you're like, oh, I get it. It's fun. This movie's great.
Yeah, I wanted to see it on the big screen again.
Yeah.
Well, like, if it ever turns up at the Film and Sound Archives, I'll be there in a second.
The director's cut's touring.
Oh, wow.
Which I've seen.
Have you?
When you bring the kids.
Actually, no.
My favorite bit of Midsummer, like, apart from the trauma, was when the old people were having their ceremony, and I just as soon as I saw it, I was like, I don't like that mallet. Again, I don't like people talking in movies, but that one was again a lot of laughing.
Yes,
a lot of laughing at it, and it's like, do you remember what happened before? No, we're moving on. All right, I've got a few questions about your friendship there. Obviously, the stuff with watching horror, being terrified together, and maybe affecting your sleep.
I think my family are just glad that I don't try and drag them into it.
Yeah.
They're like, that's great. Go on.
It is weird that we went and saw Barbarian, though, right? Like, that was me that was like,
yeah, you said,
hey, I heard there's a movie called Barbarian. And I said, don't read it. I haven't read anything about it.
Yeah.
I heard one sentence where someone was like, I had a great time. And I was like, all right, I'm out. And I took Nick and Justine, and I was like, why am I watching this movie? This is terrifying.
Have you seen it?
It's very entertaining.
It's very entertaining. Yeah.
But it was
like funny? Or?
In some parts, really funny. Genuinely
really
comedy.
And
then some parts like,
I'd love
like
it.
This.
You'd love it.
Would I?
Yeah,
okay.
You would love it.
I'll look that one up.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's a movie where you're like, okay, they don't care about tone. They're just going to change this and do that. And
it's good.
Yeah. So what I wanted to ask is, like, I've done this a few times with a lot of people, but my favorite question is, how do you show appreciation to each other?
I like that question.
Mm. So at baseline, we enjoy Prosecco bubbles together. Like, really. And it doesn't matter what it is. It's like, yep. Drinking some sparkling wine of whatever sort. Like, that's
one. And I sneak it into the movies.
What? I never. Do you really?
Yes,
I thought you bought all of those.
Matt,
what do you mean you sneak it into? I know what you mean, how you sneak it in, but like...
Every time Nick and I go to the movies, we know we're going to have a bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
I take extra bottles in my handbag.
Oh.
And I fill up our glasses and... I don't care, and Nick acts all shy. Well, not acts, actually. He is all shy.
Like, he's...
And if it makes a noise, he, like, looks around like, who's watching me? Because I'm breaking the rules. Because
nobody's watching me.
Secretly
likes
it all. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's like when we snuck into Trainspotting when I was 17 and we weren't meant to be there. We just sat there the whole time. We're going to get caught. Who cares? No one cared. I think the 14-year-old at the door was like, they didn't go and see Twister.
14-year-old probably thought you were 18.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so anyway, sorry, continue.
So yeah, there's that. There's that. It took me a long time to realise that we didn't need to see each other heaps. And that's one thing for me in friendships. I do usually form a pretty intense friendship with one or two people that I'm working with at the school that I'm at. And I used to be really nervous about that. And now I'm just like, who's the person, like, who are the people going to be? But who in the next like 18 to 24 months am I going to realize there's some cool things about that person, and then now I'll get to share myself again, right? But I used to do that and then lose track of people and then overthink everything and be like, gee, it'd be weird to message that person 18 months later because I've thought about something that they would really like. Yeah, that would be really weird. I won't message them. And so a lot of friendships up until recently, and I guess recently is 10, 12 years or so for me, that's like in that, I just didn't reach out to people that I really wanted to speak to and spend time with because I couldn't, because of that anxious anxiety contact feeling. And part of that stuff came out when speaking to people, like, and then being very clear, like friends saying to me, no, it's fine. You just contact me when you want. We're still friends. And you saying things like, this is great. And it's just talking like we haven't ever stopped talking, but there's 6 months or 12 months or whatever, like depending where we're at in our lives. And so I had a point with this. I don't know where I was going. Now I say to people when they leave schools or I'm leaving, look, I get in my head and I don't message and I want to. And then if you were to message me, I'm just warning you that I might take that as a sign that, oh, actually, I'm not a horrible person that you hate. And I'll just like spam you with messages. And then the next day I'll get up and go, oh my God, I can't message them again for 6 months. That's too much. that kind of stuff. Whereas now I'm a little bit more open to the people that I'm friends with. I will just say it's fits and spurts for me and I get in my head about it, but I just try not to worry about that too much. And so then having things to do and having specific things to do. So for you, it's horror stuff, right? Matt, it's podcasting, but that podcasting stuff just keeps us... There's regular beats to our friendship. So that's really nice to... like, even if it's like, is the episode up? And I'm like, no, because it's Friday, isn't it? I forgot. I mean, it's always a technical issue. you know, it's that. So now I'm like, okay, with friends, I have certain things that help connect us and I lean into those.
That's nice.
Yeah. Did that go anywhere near? Did that answer the question? Far out. I was just rambling.
What's the question? Repeat the question.
not really.
No?
What was the question?
How do you show appreciation?
Right.
No,
messaging you and saying we've got to see this film.
There's a movie.
There's a movie to see. And now I know, like, you, and if you're available, you go, yep.
Absolutely.
And if you're not, you're not. And that's cool. But it's that stuff. It's finding films that I know that would be awesome for us to watch together. And when you messaged me about The Shining, and I was like, The Shining, that's a great film. I haven't seen that in ages. And that was a revelatory experience. The fact that you saw me after that, I was like in shell shock. I haven't seen it in so long that all I knew were the beats and the main things and I knew the key scenes.
Yeah.
But everything else was new. I'm like, oh, if you get old and then you start forgetting stuff, you can enjoy them with a different brain. How good is that? And so I told that to my family and they're like, yeah, but you don't want to watch something that you loved as a child and then you watch it now and you don't remember it and it's crap. I'm like, yeah, I know. I've got to be careful.
It does happen sometimes.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. Not always.
So it opened up this like, oh, I should watch films that I liked. And then I was like, is this why people with grey hair are at like screenings of cult films? Because they haven't seen them in a while and they're going to watch them again and renew their vows with the film.
Yeah. I went and saw Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads album. Justine and I were some of the youngest people there. And it was the same thing. Like, oh, you used to watch this all the time at university parties and now it's on a big screen. You've taken the opportunity to see it.
Yeah.
Like, all right, that's how it works. See it with a new brain.
Yeah, see it with a new brain.
Yeah.
Nice.
What about you, Beats?
Same question.
Same thing. Is there anything different?
I have two answers.
Okay.
I've thought about mine deeply.
Hmm.
My first answer is the way I show appreciation to Nick is, as much as it makes him uncomfortable, is I make him sit uncomfortably in my praise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you hate
occasionally.
That. Yeah. You get a lot of praise lately, Nick. Have you noticed that? Too much praise. Professional praise. Not a fan.
I actually think that praise from people that really deeply know you is important to you as uncomfortable as it
yeah,
feels.
Yeah, it is.
And so if I know it's the right time and it's an important thing to talk to you about, I will make myself do it.
Mm.
And I think you understand that that means how much I love and care for and appreciate you. And also in the silent moments where I don't also shows how much I love and care and appreciate you. That was deep.
Mm.
My second way is way emotional, as I've talked about how emotional I am. I think the way I show you how much I care about you is that, and this is hand on heart without a word of a lie, I have a sister, I have people I've known for many more years than you, Nick, but when my life goes to shit, I will send you a small message about how bad it is or how much I need support, or I might not even say how much I need support, but you could read between mm-hmm. the lines. And that's my way of saying, A, I need you, but also you're really important to me because you're the only person that I can tell this horrible thing to that I'm going through. And to this day, and probably forevermore, I will never talk to some people about how hard things are in my life more than I will talk to you.
Mm.
Yeah. Sorry.
She's just hitting you with body blow after body blow, isn't she? You're you're losing.
I know him.
So, because it's great to have like to speak thoughts that you have on these podcasts, because people can't see my face.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Dad. Dad is gonna love this bit.
Yeah,
he'll tell me about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty special, Dad, sitting here.
Mm. Mm. It's very nice.
Mm.
Might just let that pause here.
Sometimes, a lot of the time, with lots of my closest friends, I like the negative internal self-talk about, like, why do people want to be friends with me or spend time with me is really difficult. And I'm always worried that I don't reciprocate in a friendship in a way that like is positive and great for it, and that I should be doing more because it feels like other people are just wonderful and do really lovely things for me.
Yeah.
Maybe I just do that and I didn't realize.
You do?
I don't know.
You don't realize.
Mm-hmm. You know what's funny? I have the inverse of that. My negative self-talk is that I do all these things for other people and they don't do anything for me. And then I go, that's not true.
I have that one.
Right?
I have that one.
That's exactly right. I'm like, oh, I do. I reach out to people. When you're saying like, oh, I haven't spoken to someone for 18 months and then something reminds me, I'm always like, here's this song I heard today. Reminded me of you. Like I do it with people, like people I used to live with like 30 years ago. Like, here is this song that reminds me of you, and I just send it. And I think, man, no one ever does that for me. And they go, oh, yes, they do. Quite a lot of people do that for me, but that's, it's that interesting. That's the inverse of you.
Huh.
What we're better at, certainly the older we get, is we tell each other that we're struggling.
Yeah.
And it usually goes, do you need anything? No, I'm okay. And then 30 minutes of texting back and forth.
Because you're not okay.
Yeah. We're like, that's fine. And then, blah, blah, blah. No, what's going on? And then it just gets unpacked over and intensely, right?
Yes.
It might even be 10 minutes, but it's like, comes quick and fast and there's conversations. It's always helpful.
There was a time sometime in the last year where I was not doing well. And I remember, like, I messaged you and said I wasn't doing well.
Yeah.
And the moment I messaged you
and
then kept the flurry, I was like, oh my God, that was so positive for me. And then Matt didn't judge me.
No.
That's like, as if he would judge me.
I get it.
But it was like, oh, I should do this with my close friends more. Because also it means that my family aren't like going, hey, Nick's, I can tell it's that time of school term or whatever. And it's about to get a bit yuck. And I can have more ownership over that. And I can leverage friends, because that's the other thing. Like friends are an extended family. And yet, I don't know, I feel like late to the party in acknowledging that.
Like
very late to the party in acknowledging that.
I think you might be late to the party in acknowledging it, but I don't think in the past your friends have ever felt that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's more about what's in your mind. Yeah, absolutely. Like, you've never left friends feeling wanting.
Yeah.
I don't think.
No. I wonder, why are we counseling?
Yeah, I know. It's just like, this is excellent. I'm not paying anything for this.
Yeah. That's two silly ones. All right, we'll get back to it. I've got questions I need to ask you off air, because
they're not appropriate.
Off air?
Yeah, off air.
Great. That's I love that.
So, what have each other, what's the other person, taught you?
Oh, shit.
That's always a great response.
There are so... When we were working together... I can't name a specific example because I can't. But you are so good at bringing heightened situations down. You're really good at noticing when someone's not in a great space and needs support. And then you give them that support. And it doesn't end there, because then you follow up and bring people back in. And I saw that happen heaps. And then I saw it happen to me. I was like, whoa, that was good. And so it's that kind of listening and observing that I see, like, I've seen you do. And of course I sometimes hear about, because you tell me about stuff, because you want to unpack things. And you helped me be more emotionally aware in friendships.
That's nice. What a compliment. That fills my heart.
Really. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
From me. How about you?
Oh, my answer? I already know my answer, 100%. Mine is that you have taught me honesty, even in uncomfortability. And I have an example, which is super exposing of my own emotional rawness, but I'm going to say it anyway. I remember one time at my house, not this house, a house I had in the past, when I was really struggling with my weight and my health. I said to you, Nick, do you ever notice my weight? Like, do you see it? And do you worry about my health? And you were really honest. And you said, yeah, I do. I do see it. And I do worry about you, but I love you. And that meant so much to me, because usually people around you say, no, you're beautiful. Oh my God, you're fine. You're beautiful. Don't worry about it. And that's one example, but that's just the way you've always been in our friendship. Like, no matter what, if I ask you a direct question, you will tell me the truth. And I know I will get the truth, even if it has to sit uncomfortably in my chest or my gut or whatever. And yeah, I appreciate that more than anything, because I don't have anyone else in my life like that.
Yeah, we do like to do that.
This is a bit intense.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we go to a rave or something?
Yeah, we did. We've done that over time more and more.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't need to be placated. I don't
need
to be.
Yeah.
Like, I need this answer. If I did this, what would you do, or how would you react, or did I react the wrong way, or especially? I mean, I think that helped with our kids because our kids are about the same age, so there was a lot of like, my kid's an asshole. What do I do about that? Like, that was freeing to actually say that stuff and have someone not judge you.
Mm.
I was lucky to have you and Alison at the same time, pretty much, who were just like, "Well, this is how you can handle it," but not like, "Oh, don't say that about your kids." Or they were just like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, all right, what's happened?" And then a lot of it is by the end of the conversation is, "Yeah, I could have handled that differently. All right, and it's a lot of that stuff where you come in with emotion. And then by the end of it, you're like, okay, I've calmed down and been a bit more rational.
Yeah.
But it usually starts off fairly intense. We don't tend to send each other soft messages.
No.
They're either silly messages or they're like, right, what about this happened today? Or I had a tough day. It's usually how it starts. All right, well, why don't we finish? We'll finish. I think we're going to have to do this again because this is very easy.
Anytime. To do.
Yeah.
And I told you wouldn't need a heater on.
Yeah.
I'm very red in the face. Hard question to get your head around at first, which is, what would they say is your best quality? Yeah.
The reason it's so hard is because it makes you have to think about yourself.
You have to think about yourself, yeah.
And also because I don't want to get it wrong, because I wonder, I don't want Nick to think I got it wrong.
But this is what happens, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Is what ends up happening. If you get it wrong, you kind of get two compliments out of it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's very true.
What is my best quality from Nick? Maybe my unwavering support. And my dashing good looks.
He said ravishing.
Anyway, I'm done. What's your answer? Oh, this is hard.
I know. I think about things when I'm asked a question. Like, if you hit me up with the question about anything, I know you're asking because I'll think about it. And you've mentioned the honesty thing, but like, I really try not to jump to, you know, my first emotional response to a question or a situation or whatever. Like, for example, we've had conversations about stuff to do with our terms of our employment and, you know, my union type organizational stuff in workplaces.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, lots of people ask me questions, but then occasionally I'll get like a, "Hey, what do you think of this? Where do you think this fits in with this?" type of thing. Because, you know, I won't sugarcoat, but I'll have thought about it. And that if I don't know, I say I don't know. I don't know.
So you think that's what I like about you the most?
I don't know. I have no ability to, like, anybody that likes me, I'm like, I'm always, why do people want to spend time with me? Like, my internal voice always goes there at some stage. I can't see the positives. We've talked about this before, probably on a podcast as well.
I think one of the things you should give yourself credit for is, one of the things I like about you the most is that you don't know what I like about you the most. Yeah. Like, you don't have an arrogance. You don't have a entitlement. Like, you, if someone is truly your friend, you feel so grateful and happy that you have that. And you don't feel like you deserve anything. And so you enjoy every moment of it. Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to say any more nice things about you.
Yeah. We might end it there. And we'll come back
again.
Thanks,
Matt.
And that's it. Thank you.